I'm Eric Allen for KLCC. Violinist Jean-Luc Ponty has extended the language of the instrument in context of jazz and rock and across borders. His first American appearance was at the Monterey Jazz Festival 50 years ago. Since then, his groundbreaking solo CDs for Atlantic Records have had enduring impact, as has his collaborations ranging from Mahavishnu Orchestra to Return to Forever and many, many others. He's touring a show called The Atlantic Years, which will stop at the Jacquet Concert Hall in Eugene on June 1st, and he joins me from France. Thanks for your time today, Jean-Luc.
You're welcome.
Well, the albums you made on Atlantic in the 70s really bridged jazz and rock in a way that had never quite been done before, particularly with the violin as a jazz instrument. 40 years on from those first Atlantic CDs, what's the most enduring part of that music for you?
You know, I had to wait until I matured to really create my own musical world and be able to come up with a concept that would be a synthesis of all my past experiences. So in 1975, I finally got my first record deal in America with Atlantic Records, which gave me the opportunity to record my own compositions. And that's how I was able to develop a concept which, as you said, was a blend of jazz and rock, and also of my classical background, because that was also a very influential element, because I grew up with classical music at first before discovering jazz and rock later on. So, and ever since, I guess, you know, I was this type of guy who has an open mind and was ready to go to adventure musically, and opportunities just came to me. And through my life, I have had different experiences all the way to African music and other things. And lately, there has been some renewed interest in the early years of this jazz rock movement from the 70s and 80s. And I was asked to tour in South America first with the same band I had toured with in Chile, Brazil, and all these countries in the 80s. And having to do that, I had to listen again to my early works, because I don't just listen to my music all the time. But it was a way to really rediscover what I had done in the past, and quite a good number of recordings I found were still, they were not outdated, and, you know, were worth revisiting. So it was a very exciting and emotional, you know, it was a strong emotion to be reunited with musicians who were in my band in the 80s. And also, for the past 3 years, I have been doing a project with John Anderson, singer from Yes. And again, we revisited my music with my band and John singing on it, but which gave us the, you know, the desire to do a tour with just the band and recreating this music we have created together in the 80s. And because there is an element where in the style of music where we improvise, it's not like rehashing the past and just trying to replay what we have done maybe better years ago. We just do it with the new experiences we have accumulated, all of us in the band. So, you know, we are making this music alive again.
You've been playing with Wally Minko and Rayford Griffin and Baron Brown and Jamie Glazer for so long over the years. How does it shift the music to come back to those songs after so long? I know you mentioned that it's not the same as it was before. Can you quantify a little bit more how it shifts?
Well, of course, the melodies and the core of the pieces are all the same. They must be the same because they were. That's what made them valuable. And sometimes some of them were successful, you know, and had a great impact on the audience out there and the fans. So, of course, we replay that, but we have. I have recordings like from live recordings from that period, and now when we record it, the technology has improved so much that number one, it's so much fun to be able to play that with the new instruments and sounds we have today. It sounds even better than then. And also what has evolved is the rhythms might be, the rhythmic elements might be what progresses, that keeps changing over time. And so we might make some bits of new arrangements rhythmically so it doesn't sound outdated. But some of the pieces, we don't really have to do that. It all depends. But I feel very privileged to be still alive and to take this music again. And you know, it's like taking like someone would write a story, would write a book, and you take the beginning of the book, and but you make a new development with a new ending.
I would imagine what you just said about feeling privileged just to be alive, to be playing the music. I would think that that would be even sharper in focus right now after losing guitarist Alan Holdsworth and John Wetton from King Crimson, collaborators and compatriots from the early years. I would imagine that's been a rather emotional time to see their passing for you.
Yeah, I must say I've been going through some heavy emotions lately because it was a shock to learn about Alan Holdsworth. Interestingly enough, the label Manifesto in Los Angeles, I think, just re-released a box set of 12 CDs of Alan. And they had contacted me 2-3 months ago to contribute a quote about what I thought of Alan's talent, Alan Holdsworth. And so I did, and just to learn now, he just passed away. It was really heavy. You know, I was shocked for several days. And before him, I lost George Duke, with whom I started my career in America. I met him when I first got my first chance in Los Angeles in the late 60s. And we were both together in Zappa's band. And Al Jarreau, whom I knew as well, and Larry Coryell. So, yeah, it feels like I'm privileged indeed to be still alive. And it's kind of a tribute to all these friends and musicians from the same generation as mine.
The music that you did on Atlantic had such impact over time. How have you seen it influence other jazz violin players in succeeding years? Do you see other people following in those footsteps and expanding on it in a way that is interesting to you?
I do. And I do. It took a while, though. For a long period of time, I was wondering if I started to feel lonely being the only guy to go into so much adventure with the instrument and transforming it. Experimenting with new sounds, devices, and so forth. But now, yeah, there are young guys. There is a new generation right now. And in several countries around the world who are really talented and who got inspired by what I started and who, you know, keep developing it. And so it makes me feel really happy that there is a chain that's going to go on after I'm not here anymore. And this is why, in fact, on this tour, I'm inviting a few young players. You know, if I come through an area where they live, like in the Bay Area in San Francisco, there is a young guy by the name of Mads Tolling, who is Danish, but whom I discovered while doing a masterclass at the Berklee School of Music in Boston. and he is great. And there is another young guy, Afro-American from Detroit, Evan Garr, who, you know, I guess I also inspired him to go into violin in modern music because I did so many shows in Detroit and he was coming to my shows. And I tried to help him through the years, and I'm going to invite him as well when I play in Detroit. He's going to join us on stage for a few songs. And there are others in Europe as well. In Poland, I did the same recently. So it's great.
Another aspect of your music that I really enjoyed were the African collaborations in the early 90s, Chocola and No Absolute Time. What inspired you to reach in that direction back at that point?
You know, it happened a bit by accident, like so many things in my life. It just came to me. I was touring, you know, because I live between the States and France now. But for 25 years, you know, up to the late 90s, I lived exclusively in Los Angeles. And so I was on tour with my American band in Europe in 1988. And passing through France, we played in Paris and other cities. I discovered the presence of West African musicians who had moved from their native countries to Paris because they spoke the same language, you know, from ex-French colonies. And so I was very intrigued and very curious to hear what young African musicians would do musically with modern instruments, because I was open to all types of music in my youth in the 60s and listened to African music, for instance, pygmy music, but it was tribal music. So anyway, to make it shorter, I met some guys in Paris, some African musicians. We did a jam with electric guitar, electric bass, you know, drums, percussion, and then they showed me some of their music. They were from different countries, Mali, Senegal, you know, Guinea and Cameroon. And I loved it so much. It was so rich rhythmically that I decided to do the album you quoted, you know, Chocola, which doesn't mean chocolate, but it means healing in a Bamileke language of Cameroon. So it was quite an experience, very enriching for me rhythmically.
Sometimes my experience has been that when musicians are credited with breaking down barriers between genres of music, whether it's jazz and rock or whether it's jazz and African music or what have you, the musicians who do that never actually see those barriers as existing in the first place. Was that true for you in the collaborations across genres?
Yes, absolutely. It didn't happen from the very start because I was taught to be a classical musician, and I discovered jazz in Paris. And for a while, I was really within traditions. Once I switched to jazz, I was into traditional jazz, but open to any experiences. And whenever I would hear something new, if it appealed to me, I had no problem whatsoever going into that direction, which sometimes got me in trouble somehow with critics, you know, because it's kind of, it's not always good to be different from everybody else. But it's true that I was among these musicians from my generation, like John McLaughlin and Chick Corea and Stanley, who, you know, we just go wherever we feel like we like going musically without thinking of walls of tradition or barriers indeed.
How much do you think your early experience on saxophone and clarinet affected your phrasings on the violin and your openness to going in those new directions?
It definitely did. You're right to point that out, and which might be the reason why I sounded so different as a jazz violinist from the other jazz violinist when I started. I remember a critic who said that my playing was as exciting as a saxophone player, which says a lot about the prejudice there was toward violins, you know, against violin in those days. But yeah, it's true that what happened is I really loved Stefan Grappelli, Giovenuti, and Stuff Smith in particular. I really enjoyed listening to the jazz violinists from the swing period and before. But I was attracted by modern jazz, bebop, post-bop, and even more modern forms after that. And there was not a single violinist whom I could follow as an example. So, which is why, on top of the fact that I started playing jazz on clarinet and saxophone, when I started switching to violin, a bit by accident, and because one day I didn't have my clarinet nor sax, and I decided to jam on the violin, and said, "Well, I can play jazz on violin too. That's interesting." So, but just to say that my influences then were horn players. I was listening to Miles Davis, John Coltrane, and piano players as well, Bill Evans. And so there was not a single violinist who was an inspiration, which explains why, indeed, I was adapting their phrasing on my instrument.
And now that you're in your 70s, are there new directions that you still want to take musically?
You know, I don't think about looking for new directions. I never did, really. It was not like a decision which I made, I want to go somewhere else. It just happened that while you're traveling musically and geographically, you meet other musicians who make you discover new things. So, no, I just keep playing. I just keep playing my music for now, but who knows? I just met a musician from Norway who is into jazz and electro, and I feel some affinities with that young guy, and who knows? Yeah, I'm open. See, I'm still open. It might be crazy at my age, but I'm still open to new experiences without wanting to be new all the time. You know, right now I'm so happy to just play the way I can play, as long as I can still play, and so far so good. I'm physically great and can play. Some musicians tell me I even play better than ever. Who knows? Maybe they're right. But anyway, I enjoy playing, and that's it. I just keep going.
Well, I'm so grateful for all the music that you've put out over the past half century or so, and grateful that you'll come and join us here in Eugene. So thank you for your time.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm looking forward to it.
Violinist Jean-Luc Ponty, who'll bring his show The Atlantic Years to the Jaqua Concert Hall of the John G. Shedd Institute for the Arts on Thursday, June 1st in Eugene. For tickets and more information, theshedd.org. Also see ponty.com. For KLCC, I'm Eric Allen.